This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is Anne Marlowe, a visiting fellow at the Hudson Institute here in Washington. She's also a blogger for World Affairs, and she's just returned from her sixth embed assignment with U.S. forces in Afghanistan. She's made 14 trips to Afghanistan overall, and she's written about one of the most recent major stories coming out of Afghanistan in a new article for the DailyBeast.com entitled Alchemy in Afghanistan, related to the commotion over great mineral finds allegedly found in Afghanistan. And Anne, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, the big clamor here, the big excitement seems to be that a lot of folks believe that Afghanistan might be able to help move itself closer to the 21st century by having these vast natural resources, might be a way to revolutionize its economy for greater stability. You say this is, though, more taking the eye off the ball of what needs to be done than a major transformation possibility there. Explain why.
Well, a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, the time necessary to exploit any major mine these days is from 10 to 20 years. Part of the reason is due to new United Nations regulations, which apply even in developing economies, environmental impact and things of this nature, which are very difficult to implement. In the best case scenario, a mining expert told me we're talking 10 to 20 years. A recent U.S. mine, which was opened up, took 14 years, and that was in Alaska. Second reason is that the mineral that they're focusing on, lithium, there actually are already sources known in the United States which are being exploited, a major source in Bolivia, and an underexploited source in Chile, not being fully developed because of infrastructure constraints, and an even bigger potential site in Argentina, which hasn't been developed at all. The reason is it's far from roads, no electricity, remote. That all adds to the cost of exploitation. And if anyone thinks that Afghanistan is going to be higher on the list than Argentina, they've got to be kidding. Those Argentinian deposits will be more economic to invest in, I would say for the foreseeable future, long before any deposits in Afghanistan would be. So I think it's a bit of a smoke and mirrors kind of thing. Also, this information has been available for a long time. Most of the actual surveys were done in the 70s, before the years of war that disrupted Afghanistan's economy. They've been posted online for a couple of years, and Reuters actually ran a piece about the same situation in March 2009, which got no play from the U.S. military. So I and many people who are observing the situation tend to feel that the reason the U.S. military is emphasizing these discoveries now is as a sort of distractor from the very real big problems we face in our effort to defeat the enemy in Afghanistan, problems which came up yesterday in the congressional hearings where General Petraeus collapsed.
Anne, talk a little bit more about how this is actually hurting the military effort.
Well, basically, the military effort is being hurt, in my belief, by our focus on unreliable partners, on Hamid Karzai, and particularly his half-brother, Ahmed Wali Karzai, the crime boss of Kandahar in southern Afghanistan. Unfortunately, General McChrystal has decided to publicly embrace him. On June 10th, he gave an interview to Radio Free Europe where he said that, he is our ally. He's doing a very good job for us. Many people in Afghanistan feel that he's actually a murderer. He's a drug smuggler. And I have written about how he owns a company which actually sells to the insurgents ammonium nitrate and fuses to make IEDs. So not a good character, somebody we ought to distance ourselves from, if not eliminate. Yet McChrystal has decided to embrace him. That appears to me to be a fundamental misunderstanding of the political situation. It also reflects a kind of cynicism about Afghanistan's political situation that is really hurting American efforts there. If we say, oh, the Afghans don't care who we inflict on them, we shouldn't be surprised when they choose the Taliban instead.
In his testimony today, General Petraeus said that his earlier assessment was correct, that things were going to get more difficult before they got better, that there have been some serious challenges to overcome, but he does see a brighter horizon ahead at this point. You point out in your piece for the Daily Beast that General McChrystal is expecting a slower-than-expected advance in Kandahar later this summer. What can you forecast for our listeners over the coming months? How much progress are we capable of making?
Nothing good. I mean, just in today's newspaper, the Taliban killed one of our major allies in Kandahar, who was supposed to be helping us implement the offensive, Arghandab Governor Haji Abdul Jabbar. That's a sub-governor, district governor, kind of like a county executive in the United States, Arghandab being one of the most dangerous places in southern Afghanistan now. He was assassinated on his commute home. If such a person can't be protected by the United States forces or by the Afghan government, I can't really see a lot of Afghans stepping out of their lanes to take, you know, risk their lives and their families' lives to ally against the enemy.
We're talking with Ann Marlow of the Hudson Institute. She's just back from her sixth embed with American forces. Ann, what's your assessment of your time with the troops? How does it compare with the previous times you've been embedded with them?
Well, the troops are doing a fabulous job. The tactics are not the problem. They are executing counterinsurgency according to best practices as written up in General Petraeus's Field Manual 324. They are doing all the things they're supposed to be doing. But when they try to enact local governance the way they have to, they're often thwarted by higher-ups in the Kandahar administration and in the Kabul administration. You know, when a good American commander, let's say, decides to try to remove a corrupt district police chief or corrupt district governor, in a couple of cases I know, he's been shut down by Karzai himself or by Ahmed Wali Karzai. They would not allow them to replace corrupt officials, including a police chief in Zabul province who was using police cars to smuggle heroin across the border to Pakistan. Now, if you can't stop that, you just don't have a hold on the situation.
Last question before we let you go here, Ann. What's been your sense of how the troops are dealing with the rules of engagement? There have been some reports that they feel restricted, that they can't really do all that they're capable of doing. What's been their reaction as far as you've seen it?
Well, I don't really think that's a problem in RC South, the command where Kandahar and Helmand provinces are. I know they have broader rules of engagement than they do in RC East, where I've also been embedded. I asked a number of young officers about this, and they all told me they did not have a problem. I mean, right now they are, for example, allowed to shoot to kill if they see people who are placing IEDs in the roads. They are allowed to do that. Largely, they seem to feel the rules of engagement are reasonable. And believe me, you know, no young officer wants to see his career ended because he's done something like order an airstrike or a howitzer strike on what turns out to be a civilian home with no insurgents present. So I think they're cognizant of the necessity to prevent those kinds of incidents, which General McChrystal, to his credit, has been very adamant about. I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem at this point is far higher up. It's with our higher command. It's with their decisions about which political actors to embrace in Afghanistan, because this is a political offensive. I mean, we are trying to get the population of Afghanistan to turn against the insurgency and support their government. But unfortunately, their government is not worth supporting.
And unfortunately, we've got to run. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Ann Marlow of the Hudson Institute and World Affairs just returned from her sixth embed with U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Her latest piece is at thedailybeast.com.